Hello, listeners. What a pleasure to have you join in on our parenting podcast, Questions That Need Answers, #QTNA on CNBCTV18.com. I'm your host, Manisha Natarajan, and it's wonderful to be back with you. You know, the best part about this celebrity series is I get to choose the celebrities, and all of them are men and women of substance. Now, in the previous podcast, I've caught up with actor-director Nandita Das, nutritionist Rujita Devekar, independent filmmaker Natasha Badwar in some very thoughtful and immensely useful discussions. Catch those if you've missed them. And let's move on to today's session. It's also with a celebrity I admire. She's utterly charming, vibrant, witty, and a very talented mom of three young adults. I can promise you, you will enjoy our session today with our guest, Anuja Chauhan. She's a successful advertising professional who went on to author and create a whole new genre of Indian writing with her bestseller books like The Zoya Factor, Battle of Bitora, and many more. Now, her books have made so many of us so nostalgic of our own growing up days. In me, they've raked up a range of emotions, and most importantly, they've made us laugh aloud. With Anuja, I'm trying to get some answers on how do we foster creativity and joy in our children's life. Anuja Chauhan, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
It's wonderful that you've made time to speak to us. And, you know, I'm going to start with just asking you a very simple thing. We're all very curious to know how you've raised your two daughters, Nayanthara and Niharika, and of course your son Devik. And we also want to learn something from it. But before that, we're curious to learn something from your own upbringing. What do you really think helped foster your creativity growing up?
Okay, firstly, my children think it's highly hilarious that I'm giving yarn on parenting because I don't think they think I make a very good job of it. But creativity and growing up, I think, you know, we were four sisters. And my mom, we were four sisters, and actually we did have one brother, and he was born with very severe challenges, and my mother had to look after him for 13 years when he finally passed away. And that kind of atmosphere, it could actually have been a very depressing house to live in, because he grew quite large and she had to carry him around, and you know, there were no disposable diapers, and it was really hard on her. But I never got a sense of that. For me, my childhood memories are incredibly happy. My mother had this amazing talent for, you know, for milking joy out of life. She used to make happiness if there wasn't any around. And she really taught us to appreciate like little joys and little happinesses. And our life is just full of those. And one of those many little joys that she taught us to really suck up and appreciate and enjoy was reading. So we did a lot of reading. It was an army family, so we had access to a library. We could borrow four books a week. So with four sisters, that's like we're talking 16 books a week. And that was a huge part of our upbringing. So I think maybe that's where creativity was something that I was surrounded with. So that was it, yeah.
Wow. So it was really your mother. Talking about reading though, so many of us are now struggling with the fact that our kids don't read as much as they used to with all that digital influence. Is there anything specific that you did with your children while they were growing up?
I didn't actually have to foster it. I find that children don't listen at all to what you say, but they very carefully observe what you do. So I think that whenever you want your kids to do something, you should do it yourself. If you want kids to eat healthy, you should be eating healthy. If you want kids to exercise, you should be exercising or be disciplined. Then you have to be disciplined because they never listen to what you're actually saying to them, but they will carefully follow what you do. And if you don't do it, of course, it's thrown back in your face and you're, you know, you're a hypocrite and you're saying you should read, but you don't read. So I think if you read a lot and you have lots of references which you throw into conversation and say, now you're acting like so-and-so from so-and-so book, and you make it into, you know, so characters from books are like people in your lives or instances that you can quote and stuff, then I think children automatically gravitate towards reading because at least when they're very young, they do want to emulate you and be like you. So they'll also pick up books. So I think my husband and I would both read a lot. He reads a lot of nonfiction. I read a lot of fiction. So I think we sort of got them hooked onto both.
What about the surroundings and the home per se? I know that currently your home is full of colors, full of ideas, different things. I mean, I've seen pictures where you've painted empty cylinders and made them into stool bars. It all seems very creative, very novel. Has that been a big part of raising your children? I mean, to raise them in a creative home and environment?
See, as far as that is concerned, once, you know, we got married really young and I had my kids really early. By the time I was 30, I had three children. So we weren't earning a lot of money. So it was very much about, like the gas cylinders that you mentioned, was just a function of not being able to afford fancy bar stools. And we did want fancy bar stools, so we had to come up with them ourselves. So there were two things. One is that things had to be cheap. And the other thing was that if things had to be durable. Because the children break everything. So you can't put a lot of like fancy curios in your living room and stuff like that. Because that's all going to go dhar bhar. Everything will end up broken. So so houses like that. And I did not want to. And then we had dogs also. And then we had children and dogs. And I didn't want it to be the kind of house where you say, this is the good living room. You are not allowed here and stuff. So everybody was allowed everywhere. And when they had these really rowdy birthday parties, I would have them in my proper living room. You know, not like, acha, you go to the other living room, or you have it in the park, or you have it in a restaurant or whatever. It was like, yeah, this is our fancy living room and it's your birthday, so you get to entertain in the fancy living room. So I don't like it when there are zones where you're not allowed and where you're allowed and stuff like that. So it was always very, my husband says this house is like a railway station, people are just, you know, walking around. But that is how I tried to keep it. I didn't want zones and stuff.
So basically open, free, creative spaces and allowing them to mess up when they want to.
Yeah, not like active, not like vandalizing stuff, for sure. But the thing is that if something broke, it broke, it doesn't matter. And you know, I like, let's not cry over things like tear in a furniture couch and, you know, things like that. So, simply because I didn't want to constantly be yelling at my kids and saying, you can't come here. Or, you know, we have a jhula in the living room, and there'd be this whole thing of don't swing the jhula too hard because then you'll bang into stuff and stuff like that. And then they would say, well, why do you have a jhula in the living room in that case? We don't want us to swing it, which is a very valid point. So I just felt that let's not have very expensive upholstery or very breakable bric-a-brac and stuff like that. Because then it just becomes, creates stress in the room, and you're always constantly telling your children off and saying, yaha mat kudo, ye mat karo, wo mat karo, kind of thing, which I didn't want to do. And it's also too exhausting, frankly.
Anuja, today parents are keen to foster creativity in their children. They feel that if my child grows up as a well-rounded person with some passion, he or she is going to be much happier. And you know, you can't quibble with that. Was that also at the back of your mind when your children were growing up? Did you expose them to art and craft, to different things, till they actually found something that they were passionate about?
No, I think that everybody doesn't know how to do creative writing, and everybody is not good at scrapbooking and drawing and stuff. You can't force people, you know. So I think eventually kids, you can tell when a child is excited about something and is reacting well to it. So all of them were different that way. And, you know, one was more outdoorsy, and one was more into reading, and one was obsessed with mathematics and not at all in the, you know, in good marks in English and creative writing in Hindi and all wasn't his thing. So everyone has their own different thing, and you can't have any rules and say that, no, now you will sit, you will go for painting class and all. Poor child, if he doesn't like painting, why are you like just sending him to a painting class just so he can be creative, you know? And I think that like we also have preconceived notions. Like when my kids all started learning the piano, and I really thought that my eldest child, my daughter, who's, you know, who reads a lot and is very delicate and appreciates the good things, that she would be the pianist because it seemed like her personality type. And finally my son, who is the rowdiest, and you know, he's so out there and he's so high energy and all, and he is the pianist in the family. He's the one who loved it and stuck to it and, you know, like made something like it's one of his biggest things. And I would never have thought that Devik would be the one who would pick it up and Nika would not. But so the thing is that you can't really predict, you can't tell. You just sort of expose them to lots of things, which I think we should do. And some things stick and some things don't. And I think if you have to keep on at a child saying, get up and go for gymnastics, get up and go for karate, and the child is not getting up, then you should realize that maybe the child does not like karate, you know. But if the child is jumping up and running off for basketball practice, then you know, okay, she likes basketball, right? So eventually, I think they let you know what they like. And then it's just a question of you sort of pushing them a little when they're weak or they're lazy and saying, no, 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 but you love this, go, 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 you know. But and I think, again, it all comes down then, Manisha, it becomes about communication, becomes about talking to your children. If you talk to them enough and you communicate enough, you will know what the child likes and what the child is enjoying. But if you don't know, and it's just kind of a mechanical thing, you're coming back from work and saying, go for piano, go for swimming class and all, then maybe if you went down to the pool with them and you taught them how to splash and paddle and corrected their strokes, and you would know if they're enjoying it or not.
Talking about work, when your kids were young, I think you were still in advertising, right? Must have been very long erratic schedule. Your husband is also an entrepreneur with his own production and filmmaking house. How did the kids adjust to it?
So we were really blessed, right? So we have our house is entirely run by my housekeeper, whose name is Eppa, who's been in our family for 50 years, and she lived with me for 24 years now. So Eppa was like holding the house together in that sense. So it was always great to have her. Not an easy person to live with. She's a very strong personality, and we've had terrible clashes over the years, but we've always managed to make it work because I know they love her and they need her, right? And I've had to cede a lot of space and swallow a lot of ego in the sense that Eppa rules the kitchen, she's the boss. And that is something I've just learned to live with. And say, okay, fine, this works for my family, why should I now try? So basically, Manisha, I'm not a domestic goddess. I have not been allowed to be one, frankly, by my housekeeper. And I've realized that, fine, I mean, it's a blow to my vanity, but theek hai, main nahi bani domestic goddess. So that was one thing. I think we all have, you know, when young mothers have a lot of ego about giving their children to caregivers, giving their children to their parents, you know, grandparents of the children. And I feel that that's very wrong. I think you should be very humble and grateful. And all these people love your kids. So please don't stand on ego and say, main dekhungi sab kuch. Firstly, you will kill yourself. And you will be so guilty. You will be guilty in the office. You'll be guilty at home. And that is just a horrible space to be in. So I think you must delegate to people who you love and trust. And the other thing is that you can do a lot of this delegation when your child is small. Because when your child is small, the needs are more physical and easier for someone else to do. But I think when your child hits adolescence, is a time where you become irreplaceable. Nobody can replace you when your child is an adolescent. In those years, say, like, you know, from like 12 to forever, really. Till 12, I think you can have caregivers and give out your baby to grandparents. And so after that, you have to be talking to your kid. So for me, in fact, I stopped working in an office and started working from home when my eldest daughter hit class 12. Because I was like, no, now Nika needs me. I have to be home. So I did that when in 2011, 2010 September, when she hit the 11th after her, you know, when I thought things are getting serious for her and for the younger two too. So that is my thing. Sometimes people tend to think the other way, that when children are small, you need to be home. But I don't think so.
Well, talking about adolescence, now this is an interesting phase, isn't it? Also, the most difficult phase for parents and their relationship with their children. So I'm curious, your daughter has graduated recently from Ashoka. Did you help your children make their choices in this transition from school to college? How much did you hover around them, help them make up their minds about their choices? There are divided opinions. People say parents need to step back. I, though, feel that children still need parental guidance. What's your view?
I think when, you know, we are lucky enough to have good schools where our children go to, like Niharika went to Vasan Valley and Tara's finally, you know, I mean, she moved to Aditi in class 11 here in Bangalore, and they had really good teachers, and they have an excellent system of parent-teacher interaction, which we went through, and they knew Tara really well. So they had a lot of feedback on what they felt she should be doing and so on. And again, you have a lot of discussions, you expose them to various things. We heard about Ashoka because, you know, I was on that LitFest circuit and a lot of people on that were talking about Ashoka. That's where we heard of it. And the school also pushed it. But finally, Tara made up her own mind. And she was, my husband thinks that everybody should go to St. Stephen's College. But the kids also have their own opinions on everything. And because he's like, my college is the best college in the world, and that you cannot say anything to him about that. But on this, he did back off and say, okay, Ashoka seems more right, Tara, for what you want to do. And, you know, and anyway, they don't have political science in St. Stephen's in any case. So that simplified the choice. So, yeah, I mean, I think, again, you talk to the child, you talk to the teachers, and then you do back off. Eventually, you back off, because if you don't back off, they'll turn around and they'll blame you. Like 3 years later, this child will come and say, you know, you have completely destroyed my life. But that's par for the course. I mean, children always say you've completely destroyed their lives, which is something also I learned in adolescence, because I think when everybody starts dating to begin with, the main item for bonding with your boyfriend or girlfriend late in the night on the phone is like what cows your parents are. you know, and it's about that and my traumatized childhood and all the horrors I went through, and so I'm bonding with you on your traumatized childhood. And if you ever hear it, you say, wow, we were the worst parents in the world. But then you think back to your adolescence and your dating and your bonding with your boyfriend, and that's what we were talking about as well. So I think that just comes with the territory.
You know, from all that you're saying, sometimes I get the sense that maybe we are overthinking parenting. We're reading so much and are exposed to so much on digital mediums. We're constantly worrying whether we're doing it right, isn't it?
From trial and error, and now my kids are big enough to give us feedback. Both Nirath and I, we've been honest to a fault. Like, we've shared everything with our kids, right? So anything that happens, they're fully in the know. And also, I personally think it's very important. He doesn't agree with me so much on this, but it's like, I feel that you should share your, you know, we tend to share our successes with our children and talk about our big achievements and how they should emulate them. I think it's very important to share your failures and whatever your traumas and whatever you were ashamed of and whatever you went through. And I think that's very important to share that quite honestly with your children, because there's this pressure on us as parents to be the person who knows better and the person who is more perfect and stuff like that. But I think that if you say that, listen, this happened to me and I went through this, and it just sort of, I think that, you know, when you give out a little bit of yourself and get down from that throne and act like a normal person, then I think it just creates for a better bonding and more honesty from your child than you may otherwise get. And again, they do what you do, they don't do what you tell them to do, right? So if your example is to be honest and if your example is to share, then usually they will also be honest and they will also share. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important. And at the same time, you are a parent, you are not a friend. So we've always been very clear that I'm not your friend, and don't come to me if you want me to agree with everything you're saying. I'm going to be quite brutal and I'm going to say that, no, I think you behave like a complete bitch in the situation, and I think you're the person at fault here, and now don't expect me to defend you just because I'm your mother. So things like that also happen and they go away really hassled, but that's why they call it home truths, because these are truths you hear at home, and you might as well hear them from your parents. And then as a child, as a parent, you must be prepared to hear some brutal home truths yourself. From your, you know, my children tell me that I'm extremely opinionated about things that I know absolutely nothing about. So that's something that gets thrown at me very often, that you know nothing, but you will hold forth like you know everything. So fine. So, you know, I try and correct myself. So, okay, let me read up on something and I just talk off the top of my head.
They do show a pretty good mirror, don't they?
Yes, yes, yes. You get to see a mirror early in the morning when you're feeling very ugly.
All right. Well, Anuja, it's fantastic to hear your experiences of raising three young adults so successfully. If you were to give us a tagline which sums up your parenting experience, what would that be?
Okay, I don't really have a tagline as such, but I think you have to be honest and you have to be loving and you have to be strict. So it's that. It's right, you. These are the things that are key. You have to walk the talk. You can't just say something. You have to do something. I've seen so many parents telling their children not to smoke, not to drink while they're smoking and drinking themselves. Why will the child listen to you? So I think maybe then the tagline could be walk the talk, because you really have to do that. If you want them, they're watching you. They're not listening to you. So please make sure that if you want them to do something, then you do it yourself.
Thank you so much for speaking to us. But you know, before I let you go, I do want to know what you're up to right now creatively. Is there a book that's going to come out soon?
Oh God, don't ask me questions, Adan. I'm horribly stuck, to be honest. And the book is stuck and I'm in a miserable, miserable space at the moment, writing-wise. But I hope that I will get unstuck quickly.
I hope so too, Anuja. I'm quite waiting for your next book. So do come unstuck very, very quickly. Sooner than later is all that I'm going to say. Thank you so much for joining us in today's podcast.
Thank you.